Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are here for arguments in Authenticom against CDK Global and Reynolds & Reynolds Company. So, Mr. Scodro, are you the first up?
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. Michael Scodro here on behalf of CDK. I'll be splitting time evenly with co-defendant counsel for Reynolds. Your Honors, this case asks the court to decide whether Section 1 of the Sherman Act requires co-defendants in this case to crack open their proprietary computer networks in an unprecedented manner. And the premise for this extraordinary remedy is a presumed conspiracy that is utterly implausible and in any event falls nowhere near the Matsushita standard. Reynolds
has... Could you answer a question of fact for me? Just a detail. I understood from the briefs that both of the dealer management systems, the one from CDK and the one from Reynolds, include not just data from the dealer but also other data as well. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. There are two other components of data involved. One is proprietary data. That's data that is introduced by CDK and Reynolds itself. There's also original manufacturer data. That might be things like parts pricing provided by Honda. That information is also contained on the same DMS systems, Your Honor.
Okay,
that's exactly right. And there was an exhibit introduced, Exhibit 186, which indicates that there some of the information that during the testing period that was being accessed by Authenticom, some of those queries included information owned that was proprietary, and some of that information also belonged to the original manufacturers. And I should add that CDK has contractual obligations with the original manufacturers to keep that data private.
So they go straight back to the original manufacturer to get that component of the system, not filtered through the dealer anyhow.
It's my understanding that data comes from the original manufacturer to us. Exactly, Your Honor.
You know, assert that Authenticom has the practical capability to extract the full universe of information available to dealers through the DMS, but do you have any concrete evidence that it actually accesses sensitive information that does not belong to the dealer?
Sure. 2 points, Your Honor. First, yes, the exhibit that I just mentioned, which was...
That's why I asked that.
Oh, okay. Yes, Your Honor. So that exhibit indicates that some of the data that was being accessed was, for example, OEM data. That's the original manufacturer data. And the second point I would make, Your Honor, as a follow-on, is that it's very clear, and as our expert, Dr. Rosenbach, testified, what matters most for purposes of data security is the ability to access data. And the concern, chiefly, and this is where one of the points where the district court, frankly, went awry. The district court focused on whether Authenticon itself was accessing, whether Authenticon itself, what its history looked like. But in reality, what matters is the, as our expert used the term, seam as a metaphor, the seams created by giving out the access codes, those create the possibility that cyber thieves that have another avenue to access this information. So even if they had not been, Authenticom itself had not been drawing on proprietary data, personal information, individual personal information covered by Graham, Leach, Bliley, and so forth, even if that weren't the case, the point is that these access codes are what is dangerous and having them being passed on and creating yet another seam in the process.
So I have two questions.
In the brief, you claim that the dealers are free to work with vendors outside of the CDK partner program by manually extracting data and making it available directly to those vendors. And what I was wondering is, have any dealers opted for this approach? because it seems that perhaps that would pose many of the same security problems you claim to be concerned about with Authenticom.
Well, Your Honor, there was testimony that the fact of mass automated access, which is what we're talking about with a company like Authenticom, creates additional concerns that, over and above what exists in the so-called reporting tools, which I think Your Honor is referring to. Dynamic reporting is the name of Reynolds' version of that, and we have a CDK also has reporting tools. So there was testimony, Your Honor, that in terms of data security, it is actually there are far increased risks when you're talking about a mass data extraction, like what we're talking about in the case of Authenticom. And ultimately, Your Honor, we're talking about an alleged conspiracy here that is simply implausible on its face. Reynolds had been doing what it's been doing in terms of blocking hostile integration for more than a decade now.
And why exactly is the conspiracy implausible? Reynolds has been doing it and losing sales as a result. And therefore, it might want to cooperate with CDK to do something that would cause it to stop losing sales. And presumably, as part of the deal, CDK is compensated in some way. Now, we may not understand all of the details by which that happens, but it seems to me very difficult to dismiss it all as implausible out of hand.
Well, Your Honor, 2 points. One, I would say, certainly for purposes of the Matsushita, you know, tending to exclude the possibility of unilateral conduct here. So I'll first say that. But second, I would say that my colleague can speak more directly to this from the Reynolds perspective, but Reynolds had devoted extraordinary resources and committed itself publicly and with its clients to a platform that excluded all hostile integration. That was indeed part of its sort of raison d'etre, the way that it functioned. Mm-hmm. And yes.
Right. And it found it was losing sales. And what better thing to do than to strike a deal with its principal competitor in order to protect itself? Now, as I say, that would entail some compensation to CDK. But what concerns me is just waving your hand and dismissing it as implausible.
So
it's easy to talk, but it's harder to show that something wouldn't have made economic sense.
Well, Your Honor, a couple of points there. There is still, so again, have they excluded the possibility of unilateral conduct here? And the answer is no. And
No. I look, that's not the opening question to ask. There is an actual agreement struck in 2015 between Reynolds and CDK.
Yes.
And I know it's your contention that that agreement is lawful. But to say, well, these people wouldn't be agreeing when in fact they have an agreement that's in the record is a little tough.
Well, Your Honor, maybe I should address the terms of the three agreements entered into in February of 2015 at the outset. And misperceptions
and
when
you
by...
Do, when sorry. You do, would you be kind enough to let us know what the current statuses of those agreements?
Sure. So let me begin with the so-called data exchange agreement. This was the wind-down agreement. And let me try to clarify a couple of misperceptions. And I think the best thing I can do is to explain what this agreement does not do. It does not bind either party to forevermore or even during the term of the agreement block hostile integration. There's nothing, it would be nothing inconsistent with that, with the agreement for CDK to begin to permit Authenticom, for example.
Well, that could go back to an open system, in other words, you're saying.
Right.
What concerns me, but I'll let you fold into your answer as well, is that there seems to be some evidence in this record that prices skyrocketed for these integration providers from $30 to $800 or so, $900 almost.
So let me answer that directly first, Your Honor. There is, as the district court itself recognized, the record on pricing in this case is sort of scant thus far and somewhat scattered. There are some data points that have been introduced, many of them anecdotal by particular customers. What we know is this, and I would commend to the court the Convert Declaration, which is docket number 90. Convert goes into some detail about the pricing. And the pricing, actually, for some of the more minimal, say, more bare-bones services, more like what Authenticom was offering, actually are much closer than the hundreds and hundreds of dollars that are described in the record. What we have is a tremendous amount, and this has been argued, of apples and oranges comparisons going on. Some of what, for example, CDK is offering includes real-time interface, for example, where you're getting that real-time data as opposed to a once-a-day or twice-a-day scrape. So there is an apples-to-oranges component to this. I see that I'm entering rebuttal, but I would like to, I should conclude by saying, at least for the
opening. I hope you'll answer Judge Rovner's question.
I will. So Judge Rovner, with regard to the DEA agreement, that agreement is, the testimony was that it is very close to being completed. That's the wind-down agreement. The 3PA and RCI agreements, you asked about the status of those as well, and both of those are pro-competitive in that they're permitting other apps now to compete with their competing dealers, the dealers not that don't own those applications. Those are in force right now. That is to say, certain certain CDK apps are operating properly using the RCI system as certified applications interfacing directly, and vice versa for the apps covered by the 3PA agreement. Again, those are a set and discrete limited number of applications that are listed in the appendices to those contracts. And in answer to Your Honor's question, those are still in effect. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Kennard. Mr. Kennard, as you're collecting your thoughts, I wondered if you could address the district court's conclusions that although there was a lot of talk about data security, there really wasn't much of a record behind the concerns for security, and that was one of the reasons the court didn't place greater weight on that factor.
I think what has to be distinguished are some of the factual testimony about whether Authenticom has secure practices once it extracts the data. That's really irrelevant to the question. I think there is loads of testimony that in terms of the decisions to close the system, both by CDK and Reynolds, this data security is a huge huge reason why you do that, as well as in system performance and reliability.
But was there any, there wasn't much of a record, though, that during the period that CDK was open, it had security incidents. I realize Reynolds has had a different business model for a longer time, but one wonders when two competitors get together and prices go way up for a particular service, and there doesn't seem to be much of a there for the stated reason, what's going on?
Well, I think part of the issue is risk. So if you're designing your system and you're effectively blocking, then you're not going to necessarily have incidents. But the risks are real, and they motivate the system design. And I would point out in this—
Was any evidence presented to the district court that the difficulties that Reynolds experienced in the early 2000s with the DMS functionality were attributable directly, and I really emphasize the word directly, to Authenticom?
There's only one instance with Authenticom, which Authenticom brought down a particular DMS with a particular query, but again, It's the rule that they're seeking is access, which would apply to all third-party access. And this is a key feature of the Reynolds system and why there's no causation of antitrust injury here. The Reynolds system automatically blocks any third-party machine access. Doesn't matter whether it's a cyber thief, foreign agent, hostile integrator, or other hacker. It does that automatically if it's entering through the dealer portal. So the blocking is completely unrelated to the alleged agreements. Blocking would happen regardless of whether the agreements take place. So I think there's no antitrust injury, and that's why the mandatory relief.
To shut out third parties, instead of constantly trying to shut out third parties from your DMS, why not pursue the dealers who share login credentials directly?
Your Honor, I think it's accepted as very strong and universally accepted practices that you implement technological barriers to third-party access, particularly machine access. This is very dangerous type of access. And so these kind of security protocols, and there was ample testimony in the record, that these are top-of-the-drawer security practices. You wouldn't try to rely just on contractual measures. I would like to also point
out, how did the open system DMS providers handle the security risks that, you know, you're being inherent?
Well, I mean, they
third-party access to the DMS.
Right. They tolerate it, and they have various measures. But this is, I think, part of the product innovation and product design. Well before any of these agreements, Reynolds decided that a closed system, given the evolution of the market, was the way to having long-term success, and that's been its market niche.
Now, if that's all Reynolds had ever done, we certainly wouldn't be here. You know, Reynolds can choose an open system or a closed system, but it's when Reynolds sits down in February of 2015 and enters into an agreement with its major competitor that you begin to be uncomfortable from an antitrust point of view. Why did you have to agree with CDK about how you were going to divide this market up between yourselves?
There was no market division, Your Honor. Reynolds never agreed not to access CDK's system. Of course, it didn't have to. It's not in that business. It's not a hostile integrator. But there's no agreement to that fact, and Mr. Schaefer clarified that in his testimony.
But CDK had these two subsidiaries or whatever they were that were more or less in the same business as Authenticom, and that all gets sorted out in this agreement.
Yes, they had been blocked by our system. We were also maintaining that their access was illegal. They testified that their hostile integration was dwindling. So in order to preserve a soft landing for their customers, and also to bring their applications onto our system, they agreed to do an RCI interface, and they also agreed to this wind-down agreement for hostile integration, which is illegal, which is also another key point that, and it goes to antitrust standing, that Authenticom
is
not...
There's no such thing.
I'm sorry?
There's no such thing. In the Lexmark case a couple of years ago, the Supreme Court said there's no such thing as your subject matter name here standing. There's standing or there isn't. There's no question of standing here.
I think, Your Honor,
there is antitrust injury.
Well, but it's a legal trade, and I think that's the Maltz case. Maltz says that...
Are you acquainted with Lexmark?
No, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Your Honor...
What the court says is you have to think in terms of whether the conduct falls within the scope of the statute, which is not a standing inquiry. It's a scope of claim inquiry. But what's troublesome here is what your opponents, they started a different point, not surprisingly, in the story. And they're saying there's all this data that the dealers have allowed you to put in this format in the dealer management system. And it's their data for the most part. So why shouldn't they be entitled to take advantage of third-party application companies, turn the data over to them without having to reinvent the wheel and have the whole thing put in some computer-readable form a second time? Why isn't this like our case with the real estate business? You know, why isn't it completely suitable for them to control their own data?
Because they do not have the rights under the license to authorize Authenticom to do that.
How can Reynolds tell somebody, it was your data yesterday, but it's our data now? It sounds like what Facebook was doing with pictures years ago.
We're not saying that the data that they put in, and only partial, some of the data is theirs. It's theirs, and they can take it out, but they have to follow the terms of the license for the use of the system. And the system prevents any sort of automated access through the dealer portal, which is not designed in order to do that. And so that's, the district court did not find our dealer agreements to violate Section 1. I would also like to address on the question about concrete evidence, in addition to what Mr. Scodro mentioned, that ECF 1612, Mr. Schaefer testified as to the scraping of OEM data. Then the an exhibit, P99, if you look at the fields there, many of those in the court would not be able to tell that are OEM or Reynolds, but there is VIN Explosion, Chrome ID, Chrome is a third-party provider. So it's not, it is OEM data, which is subject to contractual restrictions and which the Reynolds has an obligation to protect. But the main thing, they are just not authorized under the license to allow it. And that is, software licensors have the ability to set license terms. I'd also like to address, in terms of the unwritten conspiracy, Your Honor, it may be that one can say there's a possibility that a firm would have motivation to stem loss of share, although I would point out loss of share is not necessarily equivalent to loss of profit. But there has to be more to motivation.
I'm not sure you want to make that point, but...
Well, I mean, there's no evidence of that there was a financial calamity as if CDK were to go to a, to were to stay open, which was Dr. Singer's theory, which is completely unsupported. And so there also has to be, there has to be some reason for the terms of the agreement. Dr. Singer and the district court seemed to credit it, said there would be reassurances from one to the other. The problem with that is that there's no evidence at all, first of all, that they actually informed us that they were going to a closed system in February 2015, but also there's no evidence at all that CDK would worry that, that Reynolds would abandon its system design, which is with millions of dollars, its market position, or its current customers, and in order to do that, or that CDK would need Reynolds to do that because either one could block automatically. And the fact that it's system blocking and not intervention blocking on the Reynolds DMS makes the agreement completely implausible under Matsushita.
I mean, this is a complex market. Obviously, you've got the dealer system, you've got the integration function going on, you've got apps that are being written, you've got cross-licensing almost, it seems. The result of this agreement, or at least there's evidence that the district court credited, was to increase prices in the market. Isn't that what we are concerned about with the antitrust laws?
I don't think so, Your Honor. There was Reynolds increase the number of, Reynolds, when some companies went to RCI because of the automated blocking, their prices went up over what Authenticom charges. Remember, Authenticom doesn't bear any of the costs of maintaining the system.
Well, I know, but free riders are, I mean, that's your argument, but the price increase seemed way beyond whatever any free riding explanation would
support. But the price increases after the agreement were more, much more modest in the 5 to 10% range. So there's no skyrocketing post-agreement rise in prices from Reynolds for the RCI. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, that's fine. Mr. Panner.
Thank you, Chief Judge Wood, and may it please the court. The district court's preliminary injunction order rests on two determinations that are really not subject to serious challenge at this stage of the proceedings in this court. First, the district court found direct evidence to support the claim that Reynolds and CDK had conspired to drive Authenticom out of the market.
But you have to answer right away, I think, maybe there's an answer to this. an important question, which is, under what circumstances, particularly post-Trinco, does a company have the obligation to sell its work product to someone else in the market? And I phrase it as work product because the programs that create the DMS are, you know, complicated software programs. That's why I asked Mr. Scodro what goes into the system, and it's not just your data. It's not just that you turned over your own data, they played around with it, formatted, and now they won't give it back to you. It's a much more complicated product. And I'm concerned about your premise, which is, and actually the premise of the injunction, which is that there's some duty that either of these companies has to sell its work product or make its work product available for scraping for free to others.
Right. I think actually for two reasons that question does not necessarily present itself, and I'll try to do my best to answer it after I give those two reasons. And the first reason is that notwithstanding whatever unilateral obligation either defendant might have, it's clear, and indeed it's been uncontested at every stage, that they are not permitted to agree with regard to how they will block an independent integrator. It is that
concerted
action. But if
it's not
action,
illegal for the one company to do it, what alchemy makes it become illegal when two companies say, you know, neither one of us is going to sell, you know, we both happen to have the same policy here. We don't want to sell our work product.
Well, there's nothing at all unusual about that under the antitrust laws, Your Honor, because it's very common that an actor might engage in a unilateral refusal to deal with either a potential customer or a potential rival, but yet if that actor reaches an agreement with a competitor not to do so, that becomes per se unlawful under the antitrust laws. And as I say, that was the evidence
that
they had.
I wouldn't rush too fast to
per
se.
Then why isn't the appropriate remedy, if it's proper to have an interim remedy at all, why isn't the appropriate remedy to disestablish the 2015 agreements and restore unilateral conduct in the market? What the actual injunction the district court entered required, for example, it required Peterson to change a policy that it had had in place long before the 2015 agreements. I mean, I would think if the district court says the probable violation on which I'm acting is a violation of Section 1 from the 2015 agreements, that the remedy is to get rid of them, not to do something else altogether. But what happened is something else altogether.
Well, Your Honor, because what the court found was that there was that the blocking in which CDK engaged was part of the conspiracy with Reynolds. And
Yes, well, you have to end the conspiracy with Reynolds. But that's not what the injunction does.
But, Your Honor, I think
the injunction not only leaves the agreements in place, as Mr. Scudero said, they're still in place. It left the supposedly illegal agreements in place and then did something that, so far as I could see, isn't related to the agreements. This is a problem.
Your Honor, I don't think so, because I think that the agreement was to block Authenticom from obtaining dealer data on an automated basis, and I should have really started emphasizing.
But haven't you conceded, though, that during the period when Reynolds, let's say, was the only company that had a closed system, Reynolds, if it wanted to, and apparently it did want to, for reasons sufficient to itself, was entitled to install whatever blocking software it wanted to keep Authenticom out of its systems? Just let's answer that simple question. Never mind what happens later.
And the answer to that, Your Honor, is that we have not conceded that. It is not the basis upon which
Given Trinco, how can you avoid conceding that?
Because, Your Honor,
for that matter, given 18 U.S.C. 1030, how can you avoid conceding that?
Well, because, Your Honor, I should have begun by forcefully pushing back on the assumption that what's going on here is a sharing of OEM data or other proprietary data. The data that Authenticom is obtaining and delivering to vendors is dealer data. That was the finding of the district court, and it's based on the evidence of the record.
But let's
if the dealers are so
wait a minute, Alon. I think Frank was about to ask a question.
If the conduct is unilateral,
Let's look at the world before 2015. Is there any problem, given Trinco and Linkline, with Reynolds's decision that no one can get access to its system without its consent? Any antitrust problem with that?
Yes, I think there is an antitrust problem, because it's not simply unilateral.
My hypothesis is that it's unilateral.
But it's based on an agreement with the dealers, at least, and with the
vendors.
That's
a kind of vertical agreement, and it won't distinguish this case from Trinco. Both Judge Wood and I have been asking questions about Trinco and Linkline.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you have not really engaged.
Well, it's because I will certainly try. And with respect to Trinco and Linkline, those cases establish the general proposition and that, except in unusual circumstances, a monopolist has no duty to deal with a potential rival.
And if a monopolist doesn't, under Colgate, then surely a firm with less than monopoly power, wherever you want to peg Reynolds in the pre-2015 period, has no such duty.
That is true, but I think it is incorrect to conceptualize what's going on here as a refusal to deal. Because what's going on, again, this is dealer data.
You just called it a refusal to deal a little while ago.
I hope I didn't refer to this as a refusal
Reynolds,
to deal, Your Honor, but
Reynolds
if I did,
said,
I was mistaken.
In the world before this agreement, the only way to get access to our system is with our consent and using our portal. It is not sufficient to have the dealer's consent, because the dealers are not us. Our consent is required. Now, that's a unilateral declaration, and it really doesn't make any difference. I don't want you to say, well, Trinco is distinguishable because that's unilateral and this isn't. Because in Trinco, Verizon was dealing with some firms and not dealing with others. It was exercising choice. And that's what Reynolds was doing.
I understand that, Your Honor. And you're right that I think that the Reynolds decision to deal with, to provide automated access, perhaps I shouldn't make the aside, but I do want to make the aside that the statement that it's not providing automated access is incorrect, as the district court found. But with regard to what's going on here, I think that the wire data case that this court decided is a significant one for purposes of conceptualizing what's going on here. What's at issue here, as the district court found, is the dealer's data. And the question is whether a database provider can use a license agreement or other mechanisms to prevent the dealer from providing automated access to its own data.
But I think that's not quite what this is, though, because first of all, we're told in the record that the integrated program, I'll just call it, the assemblage of data that's the dealer management system, includes a lot of dealer data, yes, but it's not limited to that. And they're concerned that you either can't or won't scrape only the dealer data, that there will be risks to other things. But more fundamentally, they're saying, if you want us to provide the software app program for dealer management, there's a price that comes along with it, which is that you are going to give us the final say, and I can think of reputational reasons why they would do that, the final say over who else is going to get this data. If there is a breach, they know that the first person you'll point to is them. If there isn't, then maybe we don't have a problem. But anyway, that's the price of admission, it sounds to me. It's a little bit like resale price maintenance. Maybe you don't like it, but it's a vertical term.
But Your Honor, at least with regard to CDK, it was quite clear that that was not their policy at the time that these were...
Which we understand.
Indeed.
We understand that. And maybe they had a good policy because they gained quite a bit of market share.
A lot.
Vis-a-vis Reynolds.
And that just brings
years.
Us back to the Section 1 problem. But I think
right.
Maybe Judge Wood and I ought to make sure that Judge Rovner can get in, because we've been taking our physical proximity to advantage. Judge Rovner?
Yeah. Well, it was a long time ago, but If the dealers are so unhappy, they're so unhappy with, you know, the restrictive nature and the expense of Reynolds and now CDK's closed DMS system, what is stopping them from moving en masse to the open DMS providers or exerting their own bargaining power to seek better contract terms that would allow them to share their login credentials with third parties like Authenticom.
Your Honor, there was extensive evidence in the record about that very question. And there are several reasons that it's not possible for that the market power that both Reynolds and CDK have has been extremely durable. One is that the contracts in which into which they enter are both long-term and staggered. They are set up in a way that makes it very difficult for the dealers to get out from under them.
5 years? Yes.
Reynolds lost market share very quickly, according to this record.
There's the evidence is not that they lost it very quickly, Your Honor. It's that over the course of a decade or more, they lost.
Over the course of 5 years under these contracts, they could go from whatever they have to zero.
Well, Your Honor, that they lost less, but they lost. But that goes to the additional evidence that once a dealer has trained personnel and has established a system on one of these systems,
I know. This is a version of lock-in arguments, and of course, then it leads to the dealers will demand compensation for being locked in. There are all sorts of things that one can say, but we're not going to remake the world physically.
Well, Your Honor, there was evidence about this,
I'm afraid I'm still treading on Judge Rovner's toes, and I don't want to. So.
No, that's okay.
Let me back off. I'm sorry, Judge Rovner.
I'm worrying about all sorts of things. And one of them is that I've really been thinking about is if Authenticom, let's say you did suffer a security breach, who would be the beneficiary of the cyber liability insurance policy? In other words, would you be able to repay CDK or Reynolds losses from such a breach?
Well, Your Honor, if there were any evidence of if there were a claim, that would be what the insurance policy would cover. There wasn't extensive evidence about the nature of the policy that was raised at the hearing, other than its amount and the fact that it would cover a potential breach. But I think the district court looked at with regard to the preliminary relief and why the fact that there was evidence that Authenticom's operations were extremely secure and that both CDK and Reynolds granted access when it suited their business interests was so significant to the finding of balance of harms was that there's nothing inherent, the idea that there's something inherently dangerous about granting this sort of access is belied by the fact that they do it when they feel like it or when indeed there's a dealer with sufficient bargaining power to insist upon it.
I'm not sure how far that gets you, because I had the same question Judge Easterbrook raised a few minutes ago, which is if the real problem is agreement between these two major suppliers of services in this area, why enjoining the agreement isn't the appropriate step is unclear to me, except that it would be my guess, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that that would leave you entirely unsatisfied because of the likelihood that both Reynolds and CDK would continue on unilaterally with closed systems, and you'd be just as bad off as you were before.
Well, having established the current pattern through agreement, then that's quite likely the case. So
you're going to force a duty to deal on them that we don't have precedent for?
Well, Your Honor, I do not accept the rubric of duty to deal, because I think what's going on here.
But that's what the judge's injunction, you know, if you read the thing, that's what it does.
That's because to a large extent,
to create login.
That was done at defendant's request. There's no, we do not need to deal with CDK or Reynolds. We need to deal with the dealers. The dealers are the ones who provide access to their data.
But you don't want to just deal with the dealers. You want the packaged data set, because what we're told in this record is you can deal with the dealers if you can persuade them to reinvent the wheel.
Your Honor, what is happening here is we are pulling precisely the data that the dealer looks at when they do a query on the system. We're not asking the system to do anything that it doesn't already do for the dealers. The objection here is simply that Authenticom is doing for the dealers in an automated way what the dealers effectively cannot do because of obstacles of cost and personnel.
And contract, because the dealers have promised not to do it.
That's not true, Your Honor. Indeed, they insist that the dealers are permitted to pull this data and send it to vendors.
The dealers are permitted to pull the data themselves, but not to put Authenticom in their place to do something in their stead.
Under CDK's contract, they are permitted to allow an agent to pull the data, but more to the point.
But who's an agent? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about this. The understanding that CDK has of that is that an agent isn't some third-party company that's coming in, you know, with a scraped business model.
But, Your Honor, I think that at the trial, at the hearing before the district judge, there was a demonstration of the Authenticom's dealer vault system. And it's really, obviously impossible to see it on the cold record, but what's so important to understand about the way that that works is it's the dealer is in complete control over the data that is pulled off of the system and where it goes. The dealer, in effect, in substance, the dealer is pulling the dealer's own data and sending that data to the vendor of the dealer's choice. It is using an automated tool to do so. But there is absolutely no regard in which there is any sort of theft of anyone's data that the dealer does not have access to. And the district judge's injunction makes that absolutely clear. What the district judge says, and there's ample evidence in the record that there is absolutely nothing that Authenticom pulls off the system to which the dealer does not have access. And so what is going on here is they are attempting to disable, interfere with a voluntary course of dealing between the dealer and a provider of effectively an automated tool that allows the dealer to provide data to a vendor of its choice in an efficient way. And they are doing that solely, I would submit, because it allows them to exploit an extraordinary opportunity to sell dealer data. And the evidence of price increases was truly eye-opening. Remember, before 2015, there is a competitive market for integration services. Reynolds' closing of its system drove one competitor from the market. There's evidence of that. But nevertheless, there was still competitive access. After the system is closed, the price increases are absolutely unexplainable, except
how many dealers have complained?
The dealers are up in arms, and indeed there were dealers who testified.
How many dealers have complained? Have dealers filed a lawsuit?
The dealers have not yet filed a lawsuit.
Isn't that a puzzle to you? I mean, your claim is that the dealers are paying too much, and therefore you would expect the dealers to be suing. The class action plaintiff's bar rarely leaves a market opportunity on the table. And as you have described it, there's an enormous market opportunity here that's being bypassed.
Your Honor, I hesitate to be, I really am, in all seriousness, there is a great deal of attention being paid to what happens in this case. But what's very significant, remember, the dealers are subject to tremendous, the power of Reynolds and CDK in these markets because of their relationships with the OEMs.
Look, you're about to make the argument that they have monopoly power and so they can take the same profit twice. No, they can't, right? If they've got the power to extract $5,000 a year from a dealer, it's completely irrelevant whether it's $4,000 for the system and $1,000 for add-ons, or just $5,000 for the system and anybody can have add-ons.
Your Honor, I'm no more an economist than I am an astronomer, but I'm told that the Earth goes around the sun, and I believe it, and I'm told that when goods are not sold in fixed proportions, the single monopoly profit theory doesn't hold, and I believe that too. And the point is that this is very much a case where the demand for the data is not one-to-one. There's a vendor demand out there, and there's, you know, the evidence that they have been able to. Now, whether it is durable, Your Honor, is something that
But what you're essentially arguing is that there's a two-sided market here where, you know, CDK and Reynolds are both selling to the dealers a program that gives them a dealer management system, and they're selling to the outside world, the vendors of the various apps, the packaged data that they've created from the beginning, which is what does take you back into what Judge Easterbrook was talking about.
Kind of like what Facebook sells.
Yeah,
Your Honor, I don't disagree about the two side, the potential, you know, the analysis that would
and
say
so
that this is
two-sided. And so you have to decide, you know, at what point, whether it's Amex with the merchants and the customers or wherever it is, any company in that sense of being in the middle of the two sides has to decide where are they going to take their profits, how are they going to do it?
Well, except that, Your Honor, here it was very significant that the and it was that, and it really goes to this point in a way that's quite striking. Both CDK and Reynolds affirmatively testified that they do not provide any benefit to the dealer, any reduction in price to the dealer as a result of this data. Look, there are different ways in which there are pro-competitive ways in which CDK and Reynolds could decide to say to a dealer, look, you should really give me your data. You know, as
haven't
part of
they said that when they've said you can't give it to anybody else without my permission?
But, and Your Honor, I don't think they've said you can't give it to anybody else without my permission. Indeed, they admit that it is the dealer's data and that the dealer can provide the data to who it pleases. What they
well,
object
to... I mean, we do get to this question. You know, I could walk you into an old-fashioned, you know, room full of documents, actual pieces of paper, or I could give you a thumb drive, you know, and giving you the thumb drive is probably what you'd rather have these days because it would take you an enormous amount of time and resources. There's a transformation. It reminds me a little bit of BMI ASCAP. There's a really, in a sense, a different product because of the integration of the data.
Well, Your Honor, I think I probably agree with that. And indeed, if you know, I'm sure a district judge, if I came into district court and I said, you know, I don't understand what they're complaining about. I gave them, you know, banker's boxes. The district judge would sanction me. And that's exactly what's going on here, right? That what's going on is the dealers own the data, okay? And that's a very significant concession on the part of the defendants. The dealers own their data. That is the data that
Before it's been churned through these programs.
There's no claim that the data that the vendors are receiving is data that is OEM data that the dealers can't provide or that Authenticom is breaching
that.
It.
And so
what's so important about this, okay, is that for example, what Reynolds says is, we're perfectly fine if you want to use dynamic reporting and get these reports and then put it in an email and shoot it off to whoever, or, you know, we're fine with that. But what you can't do is allow Authenticom to use dynamic reporting to pull the same reports and provide it to the vendor. Now,
and why do you equate those two things? It seems to me each dealer is going to have its usage patterns, but when you let somebody else come in who's running an entirely independent business, different demands on the system will be there, different exposure.
Your Honor, we're not writing on a blank slate on appeal. There was a record about this. This was litigated before the district court, and that's what's so critical. There was an argument made, oh, this puts a burden on the system. Well, the district court found they had failed to show that. There was an argument that it would, but it didn't show that. There was an argument that there was a security problem, but the evidence was that they
counsel,
allowed.
If I understand 18 U.S.C. 1030, you know, and all the sub things correctly, it just says that there's no access to a protected system without the consent of the system's proprietor. It doesn't say if and only if the system proprietor first satisfies a district judge that he's making a good decision. It just says no access without consent. So why does it matter that the people who want to restrict access haven't shown to the district judge's satisfaction why they're doing that?
Well, there are really two reasons, Your Honor. First, with regard to the meaning of lack of authorization, it doesn't simply say access to the system. It says access to the system to obtain information. And so the construction of authorization has to take
information from any protected computer.
Correct. And so
if I understand the way this works, Authenticom wants to get information from protected computers within the meaning of that statute.
And the authorization is being granted by the owner of the data.
No, it's being, it is, but it is not being granted by the person who runs the system. That is by CDK or Reynolds.
But it's not,
this doesn't say permission by anyone. If I have an account with AOL, to take a computer giant of the past, right, to get access to AOL's system, you need AOL's permission, not my permission. The fact that I have an account with AOL doesn't mean I can authorize anybody else to use AOL.
But Your Honor, the issue is, I think that it doesn't say the issue is,
give me the language of the statute you're relying on.
Thank you. And the language of the statute is without authorization to obtain information. And so it makes perfect sense to construe authorization in light of the fact, with regard to the provision upon which they relied primarily.
And so you're reading that as authorization by anyone?
No. Authorization by the system owner or the
person
data
who has legal authority to give authorization.
That's right.
Surely.
You see it as two possible places. The person who's created the system, who's created the database that we're talking about, and you think also anyone who's provided inputs to that database, such as the dealer, who's providing inputs from the dealer or the manufacturer, if the input provider gives permission, you think that should be enough as well?
I think that if the data owner who has
They're an input provider for the whole dealer management system.
Well, but
the system as a whole is not just the sum of the dealer's data.
That's true, and so it does matter the type of access what access is being obtained. But with regard to the question of statutory construction, the without authorization to obtain information needs to be construed in such a way that if the data owner, the one who owns the information, has authorized the access in a manner that the data owner itself could have access to the system, that it does not make sense to make that conduct criminal.
That's a different question. That sounds like an argument about what Congress should have enacted.
No, it's an argument about how those words should be construed, Your Honor, in light of the fact that it is
presumably you're making either a definitional clause or some kind of structural argument about why the word authorization refers to anyone with authority to deal with the system in any way, rather than the system proprietor.
Well,
NSA has information on a government system and it's secure, and they authorize one person to deal with that system.
That's a different
provision. Can that person subcontract that authorization?
But Your Honor, that's a different provision of the statute, and one needs to look at the full provision. They have relied on two provisions of the statute.
The words accesses without authorization precedes A, financial record, B, information from a department or agency of the United States, and C, information from any protected computer. The word authorization has to mean the same thing for data in an NSA computer as it does in a data in a Reynolds computer.
Correct. But the thing that connects authorization to those additional clauses is the thereby. So you need to look at the question of authorization for purposes of the provision that's relied on. And then, they cited another provision of the statute as well, A5C, in their reply brief, A5C. But that talks about intentionally accessing a protected computer and thereby causes damage and loss. So the provision on which they're relying needs to be looked at as a whole. I should emphasize, though, that this really does come back to the question whether they have lawfully prevented access in the first place. Because if they have reached an unlawful agreement to deny access to independent integrators, to block the relationship that existed, the existing, voluntary, did not involve them relationship between the dealers and Authenticom unlawfully, then they do not get immunity for that unlawful agreement by virtue of 18 U.S.C. 1030.
Okay, I think maybe you'll have to stop there.
Okay.
Seems
thank
like
you,
a
Anne.
Symmetrical place to stop, so thank you very much. Mr. Skodro, do you have anything further?
Very briefly, Your Honor.
If I could just clarify a couple of points that arose in the last segment. We certainly agree that the injunction goes well beyond simply invalidating an agreement in this case. We obviously disagree that there is any unlawful agreement here, and even the district court did not find that the written agreements here were themselves unlawful. But to the court's earlier point, we would certainly agree with that. The information that's required to be exchanged, by the way, just to clarify, by the court's injunction is includes data reasonably necessary. It goes beyond just data fields that the dealer authorizes. It also says that are reasonably necessary for Authenticom to provide the data integration services.
And there's some write back, isn't there?
There is some write back on the CDK side, Your Honor, with regard to data cleansing. That's exactly right. And the notion that their service does not depend on our system is simply false. I mean, the way this works is the system is set up to allow queries. On ours, it's called an ENG for English query. That's the name of the system that's used in the search system. And they're using that search system, that proprietary system, in order to call up the data that is then scraped. So the notion that this is simply taking data and we're not involved in this, indeed, the dealers license this system from CDK and from Reynolds. The notion that the CDK contract considers them an agent, I would just commend to the court ECF 65-3. In that document, this is actually a contract, an Authenticom contract, in which they indicate that they are not an agent of the vendor or the dealer. And we certainly do not see them as our agent within the meaning of that term in our contract.
I'd like to ask a question that I hope you don't think is off the wall, but given your position that Authenticom's data integration amounts to illegal activity, would you concede that CDK's own subsidiaries, DMI and Integral Link, were engaged in illegal activity at least until the 2015 agreement?
Your Honor, no. In light of several elements of the crime and some information that is not in the record, I have to say, we are not conceding that CDK or its subsidiaries were in violation. Probably
well,
not
an
unexpected
question.
Answer.
It is indeed.
I'm sorry, Judge Roth.
I said, if it's not in the record, how can I check on that?
I would also.
I think the answer has to be you can access CDK's systems remotely with some dealer's consent, and we'll track it down.
The original Luddite is going to be doing that.
Your Honor, I would just make one final point that I didn't address on the opening, and that is, as we point out in our briefs, and I won't belabor it here, there were many, many reasons why CDK made the conclusion to go to a system that was closed to hostile integration. And they include dealer concern about data integrity. There is evidence in the record about that. There's substantial evidence in the record. We had just spun off as our own freestanding public company at this time, and that was a decision made in connection with that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kennard.
Your Honors, the system security measures were instituted beginning in 2009. They are unilateral. They're complementary measures to the dealer contract. They are not dependent upon it. If all the agreements were enjoined, and I would point out the dealer agreement was not found to violate Section 1, then you would still have blocking. And that's why there is foresharing here. If they simply had the credentials the dealer gave them, they would be blocked. So the district court completely separate from any relief for the agreements, ordered us to go in, program the system, to disable the security protocols for each of them. That's
now,
for
now
sure.
In your moving papers for this appeal, you asserted, if I remember correctly, that the district court's injunction was requiring you to create new code. Is that correct?
You have to go in there and actually reprogram and disable the protocol. And I would point out it is, even if it's not a question of standing, this the injunction can't be used to promote criminal activity. I think Mr. Panner's a construction of 1030 does not work. The term without authorization in that same section applies to many different offenses, some of which have nothing to do with information. So it has to be information given by the system proprietor. It's conceded that Reynolds is the computer proprietor. So I think for all those reasons, and I would point also out, this is not a question of denying the dealers their data. They simply cannot authorize a use, automated use of our system, which does tax the system, and for which
So once the data's been dumped into your system, your position, though, is that they can't pull it back out again and give it to Authenticom.
Through a utility called dynamic reporting, the dealer can do that and send it to Authenticom. What they can't do is they can't authorize a third-party machine to go in there, constantly ping our system, which degrades system performance. And there was testimony to that effect. But
the district court didn't think that was a big problem.
I think the district court didn't give it enough credence, but he also didn't even address the criminality issue, and I don't think he addressed the Trinco issue. So no. I don't think the relief can stand, even if there were a question under Section 1.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to all counsel. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess.
Thank you so much.